This is the Shoot Once Podcast. I'm Frank Walker.
Today's May 15th. Where we stand currently in the NHL playoffs, the Vegas Golden Knights and the Winnipeg Jets are tied 1-1 in their series. In tonight's game, the Capitals lost the first game of the Eastern Conference Final to the Tampa Bay Lightning, so that series is now 2-1. I'm going to do it a little bit differently this week on the show, because why not? We're kind of in, we're essentially in the Blue Jackets offseason, but I'm going to start with what a, something we had really talked about as much on the show. I don't know if it's really happened since the last time an episode came out. The update on the Carolina Hurricane situation. Now, if you've been following along, this thing's been kind of crazy. They fired Ron Francis. Bill Peters, the head coach, resigned. Throughout all of this, there were stories about whether they were offering enough money, whether, you know, whether a bunch of things went right or wrong, and how they were trying to hire somebody. I mean, it was a pretty crazy situation. Well, essentially where we are now, and I'm gonna read this from this piece on The Athletic here. Dashuk, I think is who wrote it. I have a hard time pronouncing his name. He writes a notebook on each week, Deschute 6 notebook. But I'm gonna read a section of it here, because I think it's the best way to try and do this here. Essentially, in reference to this philosophy that the writer says the Los Angeles Kings embraced of essentially just hiring a coach who's going to want more from his team, in reference to when the Kings hired Daryl Sutter, this is what he wrote. It was that essential philosophy that the new Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon was espousing earlier this week when he unveiled his new/old front office. Dundon handed the general manager's reins to Don Waddell, who had previously been the team's president, and the coaching job to Rod Brind'Amour, who had been an assistant coach on both Kirk Mueller and Bill Peters' staffs. The transition for both should be relatively seamless, given that they both worked in the organization before, and thus we're not going to need to acquaint themselves with personnel the way a hire from the outside would. As a player, Brind'Amour had a lot of that Sutter work ethic ingrained in him. His nickname was Rod the Bod. He had a chiseled physique long before it ever became a commonplace thing. He was also a well-respected leader in the dressing room, and so it'll be interesting to see how those two qualities translate into his first crack at being a head coach at any level. The thing in my mind, and it's what's so weird about this whole thing the Carolina Hurricanes did, is they're saying all this is about a culture change, we've discussed on this show. This show, we give more credence to the phrase culture change than a lot of other places do. But at the same time, you brought in all the same people. You were just promoting guys from within. So guys who were, I mean, maybe they didn't cause the culture, but they were complicit in what was going on in the culture. These are the guys who you're saying are going to fix the problem. The same guys who have been here the whole time. I mean, I'm not saying the Hurricanes aren't going to make changes, that it's not going to work. But I'm just surprised that this is how this looks. I mean, a couple years ago, the Blue Jackets fired Todd Richards. If they had just promoted an internal guy, would it have really felt like things were changing? when they hired in Yarmo, when they fired Housen, if they had just stuck with somebody else, if they just promoted from within, would it have really felt like things were different? And not just feelings from us, but I mean, on the inside, how does that feel different? Of, okay, well, this guy was in charge before. I don't know. I mean, is it something where in the exit interviews, the players were all saying, you know, Ron Francis really doesn't know what's going on, but this Don Waddell guy, when I talk with him, he feels like he's got an idea what's happening. And maybe something like that was happening. Maybe I'm completely off base and next year the Hurricanes are amazing and it blows me away, but I mean, they could be good. They got a lot of talent on the team, so I'm not saying that they're going to be bad. It kind of surprises me, this whole idea of we're going to get the culture change, we're going to make things different, and no, you didn't. what you did was the new owner came in, fired people who apparently, I think, because they seemed to like Bill Peters, but I think Bill Peters got the message after the Ron Francis firing that if you weren't going to do things the way Tom Dundon wants you to, you're not going to be around long. And maybe Bill Peters, seeing the writing on the wall and seeing that there could be potentially a job in Calgary, which he got almost immediately after he left the other job, made that move. And that's not what you want. I mean, you want a front office that's in harmony, but you don't want everybody taking essentially orders from the top. Now, I know some people are going to say, well, you know, I mean, what's John Davidson for the Blue Jackets, not the guy giving orders? In a way, but really what we've talked about on this show before, John Davidson has kind of a twofold job. He's kind of setting a general direction for the team, and he's playing the role of, to the hockey people, he's the voice of ownership. To the ownership, he's the voice of the hockey people. And I think that's the majority of what his job is, because I think he hired someone, Yarmo as a GM, who's right on board with what he thinks. Or pretty close, anyway. And Yarmo's talked about having conversations with John Tortorella and trying to convince him of things and trying to have discussions. But I think those are both guys who are collaborating together. Yes, ultimately, Yarmo Kekalainen is in charge, but I don't think he wants to order John Tortorella to do anything, which I don't know how well that'd work anyway. But I think that there is a mutual respect there in trying to come to the same place on the decision. That's where I really think things are at in a lot of that in that situation as far as the Blue Jackets go. So I'm kind of surprised to see what the Hurricanes do here. I mean, is this a situation where, I mean, where we're really going to see it is when things start going south, what's going to happen? During the initial press availability of Brendan Moore, there was some discussion about, you know, how he's going to need to explain to Tom Dundon what they're doing and what their strategies are and whatnot. And if that's something the coach is spending any real amount of time doing, I don't know if the organization is the right focus. I mean, do you think John Tortorella has any more than passing conversations with John P. McConnell? I mean, I'm sure he has some with John Davidson, but I just can't understand. I mean, it's just... Unless this Tom Dundon guy is putting in a bunch of work and is becoming a much better hockey mind very quickly than most owners in this league, I would be kind of surprised if he's doing the right thing stepping in here in the way he's trying to handle it. So, anyway, that's enough about the Hurricanes and what they're changing and doing. The Maple Leafs officially made Kyle Dubas their GM, which is good for them. It seems like the thing they're always going to do. Good for them. There's some interesting talk about their former GM, Lou Lamoriello, moving on to the New York Islanders, which will be interesting. I think you gotta believe if that happens, that very much changes the conversation about John Tavares staying in New York on the island there. Because if you're John Tavares, I mean, Lou Lamoriello seems to have a knack for getting teams to at least be good. I mean, maybe he doesn't turn them all into cup contenders. I mean, it's been years since he won a cup with the Devils, but but I mean, he makes the team good. I mean, he's going to make them into a contender, at least a playoff team, that sort of thing. So we'll see what happens. We'll see where things go from there. Now, jumping into some Blue Jackets news. After the show last weekend, I was kind of annoyed this came out the day after the show. Aaron Portsline did a great article about why the trade the Blue Jackets made when they traded William Clarkson, not really traded William Clarkson, but made Clarkson available to the Golden Knights, how people are really underrating, or at least it doesn't seem like people are talking about the David Clarkson contract as part of it. And I remember when that trade happened, around that time, I asked Cap Friendly on Twitter about, you know, why get rid of the contract when you can just bury it in LTIR? Which, for those of you who aren't familiar, there is a something in the NHL salary cap that if a player is hurt, you can place him on what they call LTIR, which is long-term injured reserve, and his contract essentially, it counts against the salary cap still technically, but you get essentially a free overage for the amount of that contract. And I asked, well, why would the Blue Jackets keep, why would they even trade away any assets if they can just use that? And his response was, it's more of a band-aid, really, than a fix to just have the LTIR. And I tried to read through things and tried to understand it, and this article from Portsline on The Athletic really made it, I mean, he broke it down really well in a way that made a lot of sense, and kind of lined up with what I was originally thinking. Maybe I was a little confused on some of the minor details, but essentially, what the Clarkson contract being gone does, which if you're not familiar, I think it was a $5.25 million contract for years. First of all, when you're in the off season, it still counts against your cap fully. You do not get long-term injured reserve until you are under the salary cap as of opening, you know, essentially as of opening night. So if the salary cap next year is $80 million and we still have the Clarkson deal on the books, we have to be at $80 million with the Clarkson deal, and then as soon as rosters are set, then we can activate the LTIR and free up that $5.25 million. Now, there's two major issues with this. One is, when you are in the offseason, you do get a bonus overage. I believe it's about 10% or so that you can be over the cap. So that doesn't, you're not as freed up for different moves, different potential moves. As far as some teams will go over the cap with the intention of, we are either going to trade somebody or buy somebody out or do something by the end of the off season before we go into the regular season. Well, with the fact, the scenario that Portsline was setting up when discussing this was, okay, this year the Blue Jackets could potentially be working out contracts with both Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky. If both of those players ask for and are given contracts of $10 million, then having the David Clarkson contract on the books, there are other moves you would have to make. There are other contracts you would have to move. And that would have been a problem for the Blue Jackets. They would have had to either move the Clarkson contract now or actually potentially a real player. Because the thing the Vegas situation gave you is it gave you the situation where a team is likely to take a contract they're going to get nothing for. Because right now in the league, it's really only accepted there may be one or two teams that are willing to make that deal. And that's probably Arizona right now, if even then. Because if Arizona turns around and starts getting competitive, they may not want to do it. Or a team may know, especially if you've signed too many contracts and you're coming up on the season, if they know they can hold your feet to the fire, they're not going to take it for just a middling player. They're going to go for somebody who's a proven commodity because you're just stuck. There's nothing you can do. You'd be out of cap compliance. So it's definitely a bit of an issue there. So it's a real good article. I'd recommend reading it if you have access to The Athletic. My guess is if you listen to this podcast and you have The Athletic, you've read it already. But it's a good breakdown of why getting rid of that deal is a big deal for the Blue Jackets as far as the David Clarkson contract. Now, a couple of caveats on that. I've started seeing more discussion online on Twitter and stuff about where the next Sergei Bobrovsky contract is heading. What the side that I am agreeing with in the conversation is, I'm okay with this number being something like 9 or 10 million if the contract's like 3 seasons. Then I'm okay for us getting to $10 million. But I'm, in very few situations, am I okay with this being a 6, 7, or 8 year deal. I mean, unless he's signing for something like $6 million, which I highly doubt he is, I don't want a 6, 7, or 8 year deal for Bobrovsky. I mean, goaltenders, again, you get goaltenders like Henrik Lundqvist, who stay great through their older period. And maybe Bobrovsky's going to stay good as he gets older. I mean, you just don't know. but it's a combination of the way I've seen it and the way I understand hockey and the way I've come to rely on things. Trusting goalies to get you through like the playoffs is not the best use of resources in my mind. It just isn't. And the reason I say that is, well, we've all watched Burrowski over the last few years. There's times where he will pull a game out and it'll be amazing. Like, I know after the playoffs this year, he thought, you know, I played pretty good. And in some games, he looked great. And then in other games, you're just like, what is he doing? Like, in that final game that they lost, there were two or three goals in that game where it was just like, what is that? I thought you were the best goalie in the world. And you're letting that in, and I understand nobody's going to be perfect every night. But that's just the point. You can't trust that any goalie is going to be perfect all the way through the playoffs, so you can't invest that much in a goalie. Honestly, that $5 to $6 million number, if you can get a solid, good, dependable goalie, he's not a world beater. He's not a liability. If you get him for $5 million a year, $6 million a year, and in the case of Bobrovsky, that would free up another $5 or $6 million to go pay some other players so you can have a stronger second line or a stronger third line or keep a player that you normally couldn't keep. In my mind, that's where that balances out. That's my thoughts on that. The next big story the Blue Jackets had for the week, goalie coach Ian Clark, came out. He is not going to stay with the club. At the end of his contract, he's done. Right now, there's no news that he's going to another team. He's apparently staying with the club through the draft. I don't know what this means as far as things go. Excuse me, folks. Apparently, it's... I mean, he's done great. I mean, he's coached great goalies, so he'll be missed, that's for sure. The part of the article that was more of a... something that I think kind of blew some Blue Jackets fans away, because the goalie coach leaving, it sounded like it was a personal decision. In the article, it's stressed, and in times he's talked about it, he's stressed. This isn't something where he wants to leave the Blue Jackets per se. My guess, and I'm sure we'll get a story coming out at some point about it, my guess is there's something where his family wants to live somewhere else. Maybe it's the hours of him having to travel with the team. I don't know. I'm just not sure. And everything I'm saying is speculation. But it sounds like one of those things where it's not that he has an issue with the Jackets. It's that there's some other facet of his life that, you know, it's better for him and his family if he goes and does it. I don't think anybody's going to hold that against anybody. But the thing that I think kind of blows people away a little bit is, In the article about it, Portsy wrote, meanwhile, the Athletic has learned the Blue Jackets are talking about a contract extension with the assistant coach Brad Larson, whose contract also expires July 1st. I think on last week's show we talked about this a little bit. That's a bit of a... after the way the power play has been, I'm kind of surprised they're talking about bringing him back. I mean, unless they have looked at all the tape and they think they realize what the problem was, and that it's not him, and not what the system he was putting in place, I think you make a move. I think you make a change. We talked about this with the Carolina Hurricanes thing just a few minutes ago. To just bring all the same people back and be like, well, just do it better. Yeah, maybe. But we're not talking about a player developing from, okay, you were 19 last year, this year you're 20, you've got a year of experience, you're growing. Brad Larson's been a coach for a long time. And he's had this power play for 2 years and it's been bad. I don't think that's the right move to make. I think you got to move on from it, but we'll see. Again, at this point, it's speculation. And again, because this show this week is mostly just us going through stuff, Aaron Portsline wrote, he wrote another interesting piece at The Athletic, just about the Blue Jackets UFAs, who stays and who goes. I'm going to run through the list. I know I've done this before, but I'm going to do it this time. First one, Ian Cole. I would like Ian Cole to stay. The way Portsline talks about it, it says coal will likely make in the neighborhood of $4.5 million per season on the open market. I don't know if I want him making quite that much against the cap. I mean, depending on what the cap goes up, it may be doable. If we're thinking of him as, this is the Jack Johnson replacement, this is the guy who's going to be good on a second pair, maybe. If the number is 4.5, I don't want him on a long-term deal. That's for sure. Because you've got a lot of good young defensive talent coming up in this team. That's a lot of money to tie up in a guy that you probably don't need to. But if we can keep him at 3 or 3.5 or 4, or we can even do 4.5 if we're talking like 3 years, I'd be happy with that. I'd be very happy with that. It just depends on length of contract or dollar amount. I mean, I'm willing to give him a little more term if we have less dollars. I mean, that's pretty normal there. Mark Letestu. I like him as a utility forward. By that I mean, you know, sometimes you put him on the wing, sometimes he's a fourth line center. He's a good depth player. He's going to get scratched a few times. It all depends on the dollar number with him. Because he is also the kind of guy that, as soon as Lucas Sedlak is healthy, he's a bit redundant. So if he's willing to come in at a low offer, and I'm talking, you know, $1 million, $1.5 million for a couple of years. Again, it's a little bit of an older guy too, but I want him back at the right price. But it's low. And that, you'll notice that with me on a lot of UFAs. There was a tweet I saw earlier that was something along the lines of, when your team, if you're an NHL GM and you're looking at signing a free agent, if it's not John Tavares, put away the checkbook, don't overspend. Because almost every UFA deal is an overspend. So that's what you want to make sure you don't do when you're in that open market, is overspend. Now, if it's John Tavares, open up the book. Pay the man. Pay the man what he wants. Matt Calvert. I really like Matt Calvert. To me, Matt Calvert has personified what it means to be a Blue Jacket in the last few seasons. As far as just a player who's gritty, who's tough, who plays great penalty killing guys, that sort of thing. The issue is, this is the kind of player that you don't overpay when you're trying to make your team better. Because he made $2.2 million last year, he's going to want more. We just repaid Cam. We're looking at extending Artemi. We're going to have the RFA deal coming up for Zach. Unless he's wanting to take a low ball offer, and I don't think he is, I think you let Matt Calvert go. Because you just... Again, it's one of those things when you're building the team, which, let's make no mistake here, folks, the Blue Jackets are still building. And I know some people hate to hear that, and they're like, oh, how long are we going to be building? But that's just where we are right now. This team isn't ready yet to be a Stanley Cup champion. And even if they were, overpaying Matt Calvert is not what's going to get you from, you know, winning 2 playoff games this year to winning 3 and 4 rounds next season. That's not the move that's going to do it. So I think he goes. Thomas Vanek. He's probably going to go, because that's what Thomas Vanek does. Honestly, it... Thomas Vanek re-signing with the Blue Jackets, I think, is less likely than Thomas Vanek signing somewhere else and the Blue Jackets trading for him again at the trade deadline next year. Because, I mean, I think Thomas Vanek is going to continue kind of what he does, which is he'll find a team that'll sign him. Either he'll go right to a contender, or more likely he will go to a team that is kind of in that building mode and looks at trading him away. Maybe Detroit. Maybe. I'm trying to think who else is in kind of that building mode. He can go back to Buffalo. He had a lot of good seasons in Buffalo. Maybe you could go talk with them about going there. Out west, he could go to... If he wants to take the offer, I mean, he'd go right somewhere like Dallas and be right in the middle of a kind of a building team. But we'll see. We'll see what he does. I think he's a good player. that has some options as far as what he might want to do next year. Taylor Chorney, I don't see re-signing him. I don't think he played, folks. I think the idea was just to have the extra body that picked him up off waivers, so no. Jack Johnson, no. There's just no way. We got to the postseason, and they scratched him every game. You don't do that with a player where you're like, well, maybe he is a piece that's going to make us a contender. You're just not going to do it. I'd be shocked if they signed Jack Johnson again. I would just be stunned at this point if Jack Johnson was a Blue Jacket next season. So that's where I stand on those players. There was a short article from Steve Gorton in the Dispatch where it talked about something we talked about pretty much a week or two ago, which is that for the Blue Jackets, building up the center is going to be just letting players develop, seeing where players go. This is the year Alexander Tessier from France, this is the year that he kind of put himself as wanting to be in the NHL. With the Blue Jackets signing the deal with Jonathan Davidson, he's going to be trying to make the NHL club. I'd be stunned beyond reason if both of them did, if both of them had that good a season. It wouldn't surprise me to see the Blue Jackets send one, if not both of them, down to like Cleveland this season. I think the club's got that center depth coming, but Davidson's a little bit of an older player, so maybe he'll surprise us a bit this year and do something good. I would like to see that. I would be very happy to see that. And see Dubois take a step, maybe see Wennberg back to what he can be. I'm sorry, folks, these spring allergies are getting to me. I think that's where we are with center depth right now. I don't think there's a big name guy out there. I mean, unless you're going to think we can make the play for John Tavares, which I don't think we can. There's just not a big name center out there that's really going to turn everything around for this team. It's going to be internal development. It's going to be the guys we drafted becoming better. And we talked about this on the show a week or two ago. That's how a lot of the good teams who are good now have done it. Just over time, they've just built up the players. Again, the personal opinion of this host is that the Blue Jackets are following a Winnipeg model, which, I mean, you could almost also call the Tampa Bay model, which is draft your players, let them develop, and move up. They don't have the star power of Tampa Bay, definitely. But honestly, except for, a year or two ago, until last year when they drafted Patrick Laine, how many more stars were in Winnipeg than there were in Columbus? Not that many. I mean, they get a little more attention on some of the media because they're a Canadian team, as far as in Canadian stuff goes, but I mean, there's just, I think the Blue Jackets are kind of going in that right direction as far as letting that center depth develop over time. One other thing we're going to hit on before the show ends today, kind of a totally different spot, but I think it's something that's interesting to all sports at this point. The Supreme Court of the United States essentially got rid of a federal ban on gambling on sporting events. I think it was a 6-3 decision. Someone wants to correct me on that, that's fine. Essentially, the basis of this lawsuit was New Jersey to help Atlantic City, which is kind of Las Vegas East, but never got all that popular. At least hasn't been over the last 30, 40 years. To help it kind of rebound a little bit, they wanted to open sports gambling in New Jersey. Well, back in 1992, there was a federal law placed that, with very few exceptions, one of them being Las Vegas, you weren't allowed to do gambling on sports in the United States. And it was kind of an arbitrary thing about why Las Vegas and a couple other places got it and nobody else was allowed to. I think a lot of it was just that people knew, yeah, you can gamble in Vegas, so why can't you, you know, they should just be able to keep it and nobody else can. Well, New Jersey passed a law saying they wanted to do it, and a court told them no, that's in violation of the federal law, so they went back and kind of messed with their law a little bit and went back, and at that time the courts again told them, nope, that violates the federal law. So they said, okay, fine, we're just going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. And when I heard this was going to go to the Supreme Court, I think this has been in the works for the last year or two, a couple of years, there was kind of just this, yeah, I think it'll get overturned because there's no good reason why if one state has it, the rest shouldn't. Why it should just be, well, Nevada gets it, but nobody else. Really? That, why? I mean, if you want to make it illegal everywhere, I mean, you could make that case. Or if you want to make it legal everywhere, you can make that case. But to make it legal for one state and not the rest doesn't make any sense. How is it going to affect anything? Who knows? There's a lot of just very early preliminary discussions about the leagues trying to figure out how this is going to affect them. You can bet for sure that both the NHL and the NHLPA have got guys looking into how their respective clients can make money off of it. That's for sure. What I'm sure you can expect to start seeing, because there's already rules in most of the major sports, obviously we know by baseball, about players betting on their own sport. But they're just, you just can't do it. I'm sure there will be kind of an increased eye on that a little bit. Probably have memos going out from the leagues telling players they can't do it. As far as folks who live in Ohio, where I'm sure a lot of Blue Jackets fans are, most of the articles I'm seeing are that you don't expect Ohio to be on board anytime soon. There were a handful of states that were kind of waiting to pounce on this as soon as it happened. New Jersey being one of them. I think they said Pennsylvania had already been looking into it, and West Virginia is probably going to be right on board. But there's a few states that were just ready to go as soon as this was going to happen. So how it's going to affect day-to-day games, who knows? We'll see. We'll see how it affects the coverage of the games and all that. But either way, guys, thanks for listening to the show this week. I do apologize for being a day late, but thank you very much.
This has been the Shoot Once podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Shoot Once Pod.